Greetings, everyone. Welcome to this week's Coffee with Digital Trailblazers. I'm just going to give this a few seconds to get a bunch of people here, and we'll get started with a very interesting topic with a very interesting guest. And just sit tight. This is our 100, is that right? 135th episode? Holy cow. Time flies by, and I met a whole bunch of new people this week that I'm excited to have on the program and be a part of our community of digital trailblazers. If you are here, please do say hello in the comment stream, and I look forward to this conversation. We're going to be talking about from digital leaders to frontier firm. And I'm going to let our special guest, Niraj Tanani, who's the CEO of NetWoven, tell us a little bit about that when we get started. We are just waiting for getting a few more people here, and then we'll start with our conversations today. Hello, Gloria. Welcome. Got Derek on here on the comment stream. We got Niraj. Who else is here today? Everybody do say hello. I want this to be an open conversation. Hello, Dennis. Thank you for joining. You're all welcome to comment. I will call out some of the comments that I think are useful. We might put some of our comments into the actual whiteboard as we start creating it. Hello, Jay. Jay is a good friend, a Star CIO member, an ex-Microsoft, I'm just going to say an ex-Microsoft T, a co-pilot expert. So great to see you. Hello, Michael. Thank you for joining from Atlanta. Michael, I think you know this. I'll be speaking on Atlanta. The new date is September 10th. This is an event at the Microsoft Center that NetWoven is sponsoring. And I am very excited to be there. So, Michael, if you don't have the access link to get to that, do let me know. I'll make sure you get on the list to be able to come see that program on AI governance in about a little bit over a month. Folks, thanks for joining this week's conversation from digital leader to frontier firm, AI and governance strategies. Today's episode is sponsored by NetWoven. We'll have a little bit more about NetWoven as we get into the conversation. And Niraj and I are good friends, as are a few of the folks over at NetWoven. I first met Chris Wilkinson. I don't know, a whole bunch of years ago. We've stayed in contact. He was a big fan of driving digital, and he had me come and speak at an event for Microsoft All the Way Out. When was this? February. Again, a NetWoven event. And we spoke about AI governance and strategies and things like data security, posture management, and just getting more organizations ready for this area of AI. And believe it or not, back then, agentic AI and AI agents was just on the tip of our tongues. We weren't even really talking about them. And here we are today, and you can't stop hearing about them. So I'm really interested in seeing where this conversation goes today. Niraj, welcome to the floor. Thank you for sponsoring this week's episode. And tell us a little bit, you know, help us define what a frontier firm is. And how digital leaders can guide their organizations on AI transformations. Good morning, Niraj, and welcome, and thank you for being here.
Thank you, Isaac, and thanks everyone for joining this morning. You guys hear me fine?
Yes.
You know, it's a very interesting time in the age of AI these days. I did my first event on AI and governance back in November of last year. And I look back and see, like, just in the last 6 months, how much has really changed in the AI space. You talked about frontier firm. This was something that was actually coined recently back in April. Jensen Huang, actually, you know, as you probably, I'm sure you all know him, he identified four waves of AI. Wave one being the perception wave, wave two being the generative wave, wave three being the reasoning wave, and wave four being the physical wave. We're in this, what we call the reasoning wave, where these agents are becoming predominantly important. And really, what is really going on is that in this, a new organization blueprint is emerging for companies to operate and work. And in this blueprint, it blends machine intelligence with human judgment. And that is where AI and the human coordination is moving forward. The systems are getting built that are AI operated but human-led. And this is the emergence, that we are seeing with organizations. And Microsoft has coined this term called the frontier firm of these organizations. So that's really, what we are seeing for these frontier firms that are being operated by humans and agents together.
So, Nards, tell me, it sounds a little bit like not being on the bleeding edge, but at least being an early adopter and going beyond just experimentation, but actually starting to realize value from AI. Maybe speak to a little bit about why it's important for organizations to be ahead of the curve and become a frontier firm.
Yeah, this is like the any curve, technology curve that we go through. If you remember when Twitter came out, the first few conversations people had were commenting on simple things, and then it became a very potent business tool. And we're seeing the emergence of the same thing happening in the frontier firm concept, where currently the first wave was around the use of AI as assistants to do simple tasks. Now we're seeing this emergence of getting complex tasks done by these so-called AI agents, but obviously led by humans, and it is sort of moving into a more doing more complex and involved tasks for organizations. So that's the what we are seeing currently.
Thank you, Niraj. I'm going to pass the mic over. Let's see. Let's go to Joe first this time this week and then see who raises their hands up. Joe, we're always as looking at emerging technologies. I don't think we could call AI emerging or even generative AI emerging, but a lot of the things that companies are trying to do with AI still feels like emerging. And what is your sense on, how would you describe the level of urgency and importance to be a little bit on the frontier when it comes to AI technologies?
Well, there's obviously a lot of FOMO, right? Companies are looking at articles published every day, news stories, and all sorts of things swirling in it. As you would expect, the old airline magazine, the proverbial airline magazine story, every board, every CEO is asking, what are we doing with AI? So there's pressure from the top. But I just want to make a point about frontier organizations. There's an old adage about how you could spot the pioneers in the early days. Those were the guys with the arrows in their chest. So I'd love to hear from Niraj about how, and I'm sure we'll get into this, how we avoid the pitfalls of being too far out front, because that is a real danger and one that we have to be very cognizant of.
Niraj, you want to comment on that a little bit?
With every technology inflection point, we face this anxiety, as humans, right? And it all kind of links back to the strategy, because AI in many ways is very different, and people really have to embrace it sooner than later. However, having said that, it's no different than any other technology inflection curve that we've gone through, where there will be an initial hype period where you're testing it, you're trying it, you are figuring out what works, what doesn't work. Then you are kind of identifying certain use cases and business processes where you want to automate and you want to kind of take it to the next level. So we're seeing a similar concept as we have seen in previous inflection points being applied to the AI inflection, AI curve here. The only difference this time is that the rate of acceleration is rapid. I think, if you look at it, I'm sure if you recall some of the statistics from OpenAI and others in terms of how fast the adoption has occurred, that is where, I think we're seeing a sea of change. So the implementation phase and the working with organizations and the CEOs looking at how to implement it, the process remains the same. However, there is rapid acceleration.
I want to comment on that, Niraj. People who look at my background in transformation, what I tell them is I got a front seat to it. In 1996, I joined a company helping newspapers go from print to web. And we were doing everything from editorial to classifieds. Every major business line ended up becoming digitized, and user experience, workflow changes. 96 through 2001 was a wave. 2001 was another wave. We're talking multiple years of the newspaper industry being able to adjust to disruptive technologies. And most of you who are listening know it doesn't really end well for that industry. They didn't challenge their status quo. They didn't challenge their operating model, their business model, their way of interfacing with customers. And that was over a pretty significant period of time. We're talking now, agents is really about a year old. Large language models about 3 years old. And there's a whole new wave coming around agentic AI. I heard yesterday this first term. I'm wondering if Joanne knows this term, the internet of agents. I heard yesterday as a new buzzword. I'll let her comment on that next. But Derek, I expected your hands to raise for AI governance, but here, tell me what it means to you, for you to be a frontier firm or security expert.
So yeah, great question. And then when you look at this, I like Joe's analogy about those out front are the ones with the arrow in the chest. I mean, from my perspective, I look at those frontier firms. Yeah, they're going to be the ones that are kind of leading the innovation, but they're also setting the pace for innovation. You're going to look at, what are the risks involved with that? And I think also the companies need to really be fully engaged and look at to champion the adoption of this from a security perspective. Nobody wants to jump into anything new that's going to, make them spend more money to mitigate threat, to risk, or anything of that nature. But also look at how the cultural can change to work with it. As mentioned earlier, the value case, what's going to be the value to the overall organization? How is it going to improve ROI? How is it going to improve business processes? How is it going to improve anything that's going to help make the business that much more substantial in the marketplace that it's trying to dominate? The pace at which they move is really, as Niraj mentioned, it's stellar. It's a rapid pace we've never seen before. And a lot of companies have stumbled into, unfortunately, where they have been mitigated or have been issues where they've actually divulged things they should not have. And I think we need to really look at more of a resilience mindset of the AI lifecycle adoption for this. How can we maintain and move in this frontier pace in a secure manner, but also maintain the principles of the organization moving forward? And I think, there's companies are out there, but you got to have the heart to do it because, like I said, it's not an easy task. And it's for those that can really sustain that momentum and those are going to really kind of move forward and be a premier.
Thank you, Derek. It's very interesting to think about that balance about being in the front but avoiding the arrows, as Joe called it. Joanne, your comments on a frontier firm and maybe a comment here. Dennis asked a question on the chat. What are the table stakes for being a company on the front of AI around data or talent? I wonder if you have a comment around that.
I do. First of all, it's about purpose. It's about outcome. In the agentic space, you use generative AI for creative. You use agentic when you want an outcome. So here's an example of an outcome. Yesterday, we were with a prospect. We were talking about our technology and our platforms, etc. And we used the sort of meeting capture software, whether it's Otter or Fathom or Choose Your Brand. We then took that, threw that into a tooling kit that we have that we use for software engineering. And before we walked out of the meeting or got off the Zoom call, I should say, we were showing the prototype of what the customer would want. So 1 hour from start to finish, and they had a piece of software ready to use as a prototype. That's being a frontier firm. That's taking technology and leveraging it not only for purpose, but for its value and showing someone this is what you can do with it. Now, it was a very rough prototype. It was not, anything ready for prime time, but it was the visualization of what they were saying. This is what we think we need. This is what we want to get to, and this is the outcome we're trying to achieve. Now we've taken those notes, we've reverse engineered what they're talking about into something that they can actually touch and feel. To me, that's what being a frontier firm is. It's very bleeding edge. We know that in the agentic space, trust is a five-letter word, to Derek's point. Nobody trusts agents right out of the box. And to the comment that you made earlier, Isaac, about the internet of agents, we commonly call it a swarm. We refer to buzzing of bees because you literally can run things in parallel. So what I'm trying to illustrate to you is not only that the frontier firms are those that are pushing the boundaries, but they're being very clever, as we hope to be, about how they're using the technologies of AI to drive outcomes without friction, faster, without necessarily breaching the trust of the end user, but also using them as a way to build the trust in the capability. What we heard from our prospect was, that's amazing. How did you do that so fast? And we showed them literally step by step. These are the tools that we used. This is how we could capture what we think you're telling us. If we're wrong, no harm, no foul. If we're right, tell us where the right parts are and tell us what you don't like about it. And then we can iterate very, very quickly. So to the agile discussion, this is now accelerating agile to the point of delivery in minutes, not days, weeks, or months. And that's what, to me, frontier means.
That's awesome. Congratulations on your shift from POC into demos, live demos with customers. It's awesome to hear the progress that you've been making. And we're going to have to invite you to do an unveiling here and talk about more of what you're doing at a future episode.
Sure.
Let's bring John in. John, you're the person I love asking about just emerging technology in general, in terms of where the use cases are going. So, what do you consider a frontier firm? And I want to go back to a question I just asked earlier from Dennis about what are the table stakes today? Maybe what is a frontier firm ahead of?
Yeah, and I think AI is different than almost any of the technologies that we've had in our lifetime. To me, it's like a foundational or infrastructure technology. It's kind of like electricity, and that's because it can be applied almost everywhere. And so I think if you think of it as a technology, it has to be on the same level as like the internet. Because in my view, its impact that's going to happen to society. And so frontier firms, to me, those are firms that are looking at everything they do, all the work that they do, everything they do for customers, everything they do internally, and they're looking at what do we want the humans to do, and what do we want the AI technology to do. And so the frontier firms, I think, they actually literally looked at all the work that was going on in progress, and they looked at like what work do we need to stop so that we can reprioritize and change the direction of our company. And you can see that when you read the stock reports of companies. And so when you read the quarterly reports, it's really clear. Or if you're talking to the people in these companies, the companies that are technology companies and frontier companies, they are changing the direction of the company, the trajectory of the company, what the company is, to align to this.
I love that concept. I mean, we talked about the need to say no and stop doing things that are at the dead end. I think that's a good definition to bring in around frontier firms. And then what I wrote here is frontier firms reinvent themselves. Joe, I'm going to give you the last word on this, and then we're going to move into the topic around this concept of human agent teams.
Yeah, I think building on the comments that were just made, it's really more of a cultural shift. It's a change in the way the company operates from top to bottom, and really across the board. It's more than just new tools or technology. It's really a fundamental change in the organization. Some people who perform mundane tasks are going to be elevated or eliminated. And other people are going to embrace this technology and be able to accelerate what they do and be able to do it better. So it's really a fundamental change in the culture, the complexion, the nature of the way that the people within the business entity operate. And to Joanne's point, all in the service of better or different business outcomes.
Very cool. Thanks, everybody. Let's move on to our second question today. This is a term, I don't know if Microsoft created it. It's highlighted in their paper around frontier firms. It speaks to how we should be thinking about agents themselves. And I've heard a lot of descriptors around this. I think this is the one I like the most, Niraj, this idea of human agent teams. I really liked your description of human judgment plus machine intelligence around this. What are some of the examples of human agent teams that you've seen that NetWoven has worked with your customers, and what do you see the business value being delivered around it?
Yeah, thanks, Isaac. I got to be honest, a couple of months ago, or maybe a year ago, when I heard of the term agent and I read about it, to me, it sounded like a subroutine in a program. If you remember, for some of us, I grew up from the programming ranks and we used to write subroutines. It was no different to me. So I kept kind of digging in to find out, okay, what's different about this subroutine? Why are we really calling it an agent? And over time, as things began to mature, it was very clear, that we're sort of, we started from subroutines back in the 2000s. We had what we call the comm decomm agents, that were managed. Now we're in the age of agents, which are nothing autonomous entities, and they have the mind of their own now. Obviously, and of course, with human-led interactions, where they're doing certain things and they're learning to do things. I'll share with you. As a CEO, sometimes people tell me that I should not be programming, but I actually rolled up my sleeves a couple of weeks ago and started to do vibe coding just to understand how this technology works and what it really does. And it was amazing to see how these agents, when you're building a website or when you're building an application, how these agents are actually working together. It was surreal. So being able to, I mean, in our lifetime, I could not have imagined that we are writing software and there is these agents who are actually testing the entire software and giving and self-healing themselves, and fixing the code. So there is a lot of activity happening from that area in terms of these agents doing things, but obviously being guided by humans. And I would encourage everyone actually on the podcast here to do some vibe coding. You're going to see a whole new world of how agents operate.
Can you go deeper on that, Niraj? Like, we haven't used the term vibe coding here on the coffee hour. What is it? What does it allow you to do? What's this? Go ahead.
So imagine that you had a piece of software and you could actually engage and discuss, talk to that software in English. And English is your new programming language. So let's say that you wanted to build a website, I said, for a new website for your company, and you could utilize this vibe coding concept and basically to this emerging category of software, you could tell it to say, hey, I want to build a website similar to this other website that I have, but here's my unique content. And you will see that software actually goes, collects all the information, does the grunt work of building information, creates the search engine optimization for your website, adds lead generation magnets to it, creates content for you so that you can post content on a regular basis. This is a very good example of how agents are actually bringing your idea to life in a matter of minutes or hours. As Joanne mentioned right earlier, that the acceleration and the other panelists too, the acceleration has happened rapidly, and vibing is another modern way of doing it, which actually takes advantage of these core agents that are out there. Some of it will be your own, some of it will be from third parties.
Very interesting. Somebody asked me about this a few days ago about how to picture agents and what you're describing as vibe coding. from the ground up. And what I said is, oh, if you know what an API is, and you know that most APIs are, programmed through endpoints and through JSON, now think of an API that takes English as a front end. And you can speak to the agent and ask it what it does and ask it to start doing things for you, because now the agent is connected to your operations. Now take this one step further, and we talked about orchestrating services through API calls and building workflows around them. And workflows come from the generation of rule-based systems, linear-based systems. And so, we have a set of inputs, a set of processes along the way, a certain things, set of things that we're trying to achieve, and we build a workflow around it. Part of it with people doing steps, part of it with machines doing steps. Now we turn it upside down. Now we turn it into a less deterministic approach. And instead of programming a workflow, what we're enabling is role-based activities. It's almost like you and I walking into a room, and there's an architect there, there's a developer there, there's a tester there. They're all playing their different roles as agents, and we're having a conversation with them and saying, this is the type of thing that I'm trying to build. And they're having a conversation among themselves as their different agents, figuring out what they're doing and orchestrating. Here is how collectively we can respond to your question. It's really interesting to watch, because if you watch the logs of that discussion, right, the logs of an API discussion are these observable, JSON rich streams that you need technology to go understand what's going on. When you look at it from an agent-to-agent conversation, it's happening in English. And you could see all the conversations these agents are having that are leading to them to come back with what activities they're recommending and that they're actually actioning for you. It's very interesting. I'm going to go around the room and then we'll come back to Niraj on this. John, we're talking now about human agent teams and their business value. What are you seeing out there?
Yeah, and I love the visual of the subroutines, and I always think about the matrix and the characters in there, because the characters in the matrix are running subroutines and as agents. And what I'm seeing is my friends at neat tech companies are building agents that have specific purposes. One of my friends is at Pioneer Square Labs, Kevin Lenway, and he built an agent that helps with software development, and he interacts with it via Slack and GitHub, and it can do pull requests and review code, and you can give it text and it'll create requirements. So like almost anything that like an intern would do, that's a personality he gave it in software development, it'll do those tasks, and they communicate with each other via the normal software development tools. And one of my other friends is at a phone company, one of the cellular phone companies, and he's on the compliance team, and they're using all sorts of generative AI to help, make sure that people have the right permissions, that they don't have too many permissions. And so these things have tasks to like reach out to managers and say, hey, does your user have the right permissions here? And it's really helpful when you have a couple hundred thousand people in an org, because you can go through the whole org on a quarterly basis and ask every manager if the people have the right permissions, and kind of hint when, hey, this person has access to this thing, but we don't really think it should. And so that's what I'm seeing with my friends, just really neat agents that have specific purposes that are acting on their own to make the things better and do tasks that people don't want to do.
Very, very cool. I'm really interested, Derek. What is the security version of a human agent teams? I mean, the data is bigger, faster, more complex. The bad guys are bigger, faster, more complex. What does a human agent team look like in security?
Absolutely. So you're seeing this already in some of the architectures, and they call it human agent architectures, human AI agent architectures. And you see them using it in Microsoft, Darktrace, CrowdStrike, Rapid7. They all have got what you call these threat commands. And these threat commands are doing just what Niraj said. They're actually using artificial intelligence and analysts to review these anomalies or things that come across their screen to double check to say, are these threats are anomalies real? And they prioritize those threats based on the human analyst investigating and say, yes, I can validate this. And I think it's going to be something we're going to see more throughout the ages, because people need to become confident and trust the systems that they're using when these AIs are spitting out information to make sure it is valid, make sure it is substantial. But what it does from a value position, it helps them make faster decisions. It helps them analyze that threat and say, yeah, this is a threat. It helps them escalate to what needs to be done to mitigate that threat. It's also going to help them, because of the fast and the speed at which they can do it, reduce costs. So that particular customer that they're working with, let them know what needs to be done, isolate a container, and what fixes they need to do to put in place to make that happen. These things with the container, the key thing is the AI agents working to increase the accuracy of these detections, because with the AI attacks, they're going to come faster, they're going to be more complex, and the human alone just can't work with that. I'm also seeing that just in customer service type services, you see this now where a lot of customers are moving from their online human interface to now chatbots. AI chatbots, where they're now interacting with directly using the voice command streams, and it makes it harder now to even get an agent, but there's always one available in the background. So it just depends on the industry you're working for. But from a cyber perspective, they've been using it now for at least a good year, and they're trying to perfect it to make it better. And again, those customers and entities or those businesses that move in this area are going to be leading in this particular area, because that's what we need. We need that security, we need that trust, we need that reliability to make sure they are working together until that system can become more reliable to be self-sustaining.
Thank you, Derek. Let's just keep going around the room. Joanne, we're talking about human agent teams. There's also a question here from Bharat on the common stream, and he wants some examples, like who should we use as a person, who should we personify? What company or companies might we use as a way of saying this is what a frontier firm might look like? Joanne, you have any examples of that? And then we'll bring Joe and then Niraj to see if they have any examples.
Companies that are frontier organizations, or those that what I call humanify their AI. And what I mean by that is an example of a company that humanifies is one that understands that agents learn, they're constantly evolving, constantly changing, and adapting, which is great. But they also need to be trusted, and they also need human in the loop, meaning guardrails that are assigned based on the role or the persona of the individual that would be asking a question or looking for an answer. So, in human in the loop, what you're doing is you're giving the system an opportunity to leverage institutional and tribal knowledge of the workforce. That's the in tandem human agent experience that I think a lot of frontier firms are trying to go after. We do it from the perspective of a manufacturing enterprise. So you would have as a persona a worker on a plant floor. You could have an engineer, a controls engineer. You could have a plant manager, a supplier, a customer, any of those roles. The companies that are really excelling at this are those that understand that human in the loop doesn't just mean having a human overseeing the AI from the trust perspective. It's drawing in the humans into the loop of what used to be called a workflow and allowing them to have the adaptability to use the tools as they need on the daily basis. Because we all know, particularly as executives, you change hats every 2 minutes. You're constantly doing things that involve a different role. If you're tied to kind of an old school method of what role means, you would not be permitted from a security perspective or from a business perspective to see information that actually adds the context and the nuance that you need, the semantic layer, if you will, that makes AI work.
Thank you, Joanne. I actually like that definition of, looking at that partnership. And I think one of the reasons that we don't have a lot of shining examples here, we talked about AI in customer experiences and in products a couple of weeks ago, maybe it was last week. And we're seeing more AI and agentic AI being used on the inside, on future of work, on workflow, on the concept of virtual agents. I think that's where we're seeing most of it. And so I'm going to wait for Niraj to have some examples of where people are really excelling at it. Folks, before we go back to Niraj and Joe and our question around collaboration on AI governance, I just want to thank NetWoven for sponsoring today's episode. NetWoven is a trusted Microsoft solutions partner who leads organizations with their AI journey. We help organizations build AI-powered applications, unlock data for insights, and protect their organizations from cyber threats. You can learn more about NetWoven at www.netwoven.com. And thank you, Niraj, for being such a strong supporter of the Coffee with Digital Trailblazers. I'll announce our upcoming episodes at the end of our session. I want to keep going with our conversation. And let's bring Joe back. And Joe, I want to hear what you think about a human agent team. And then we'll bring Niraj back. We'll start talking about governance as we're trying to balance being on the frontier but not breaking things. Go ahead, Joe.
So a couple of months ago, I was fortunate enough to get a peek behind the curtain at a major consulting firm, and the chief technology officer had embarked on this project to replace specific roles, individuals in the organization with agents. But what was interesting and I found incredibly unique and exciting about the architecture was the network of agents, or as Joanne said, the swarm of agents were tied together with an interface which we're familiar with, and it's called English. He had architected it such that every time you replaced a human in the loop with an agent, the interface didn't really change because you would pass the information along in English. And so it was humans to agents and agents to agents, agents to humans, all in English. I found that fascinating.
Yeah, it's like very sci-fi-ish. It just feels like you're in an episode of Star Trek. Except that there's actually a visual of what's happening behind the scenes and how it's working. You know, my concern around this is that, you know, we talked about shadow IT, and now it's not just IT, it's shadow AI, and it's really potentially the shadow of the swarm of shadow AI, all these agents and all these platforms. I'm actually writing an article around this today that will probably come out on Monday. Go ahead, Joe.
But thank you, Isaac. Think about how easy it is to implement this. You have clear vision into who's saying what. You have complete audit trails. And there's no major culture change. It's just that you're now talking to agents, and agents are talking to agents instead of just people talking to people.
So let's bring Niraj back. Niraj, I want you to comment on this conversation. Who's doing this well, or at least what are they doing well? What are some of the examples that they're using agentic AI, or they're using vibe coding and starting to really see the value from it? And then let's go on to our next area. How do we do this reliably? How do we do this with security in mind? How do we close the collaboration gap between our stakeholders and enterprises, between risk, legal, security, IT, and make sure that when we start becoming a frontier firm, we're not getting the arrow stuck in our back?
Yeah, great question, Isaac. I am based particularly here in the Silicon Valley. And as you know, that, you know, everybody lives and breathes technology here. Every other person next to me is probably has a startup or something, doing something or the other. So sometimes, you know, I live in this area where there's a lot of tech hype. And historically, Microsoft hasn't been first to the party of any tech. They wait for it to become a $1 billion, you know, category, and then they jump in and like swoop the category. But this time with Microsoft, we are seeing very different energy. They are first to the party everywhere. You know, when I went to customers in the past, you know, it was everything else being discussed, you know, and then Microsoft would come later. But now conversations with the CIOs are happening with Microsoft also embedded in there. So that is great news for companies like ours. And Microsoft has a great deal of penetration and connection with the enterprise segment, both small and large enterprises. So when we are working with customers, we're seeing, I just mentioned in the chat that there is a process that we recommend to customers, which is the crawl, walk, run, fly journey. So different companies are in different phases of that journey, but if one is in the crawl phase, we typically recommend organizations to use, non-risk business areas to test them out, to get, the feet wet and really get going on their journey. So the initial applications that we work with customers and, what we are seeing is more low-risk areas of internal business functions. Then people go to the walk and the run journey, and we see them utilizing them more for critical business functions like engineering, like, supply chain, like sales and marketing, where there is more customer-supplier interaction and the business value and risk is also higher. So that's sort of what we are seeing in organizations as they are going down this journey.
I'm seeing very similar things, but I am seeing more firms talk about getting into run and fly mode. They're using AI in areas like customer support and customer care. They're not making the same mistakes of trying to do fully autonomous but rule-oriented chatbots. Those lead to very frustrating experiences. And what they're doing is making very, very smart human agents working with a virtual agent, very much what you described earlier in our conversation, this sort of human judgment plus machine intelligence. And so when you speak to one of these agents, they know who you are, they know what you've bought, they're listening to what your problem is. They're asking the agent about what are some of the options to present to you as solutions. It's becoming a much different experience and a much more controlled experience. Niraj, before I go to the floor, talk to me about this idea of collaborating on AI governance and how do we make sure that as we're building frontier capabilities, we're not opening ourselves up to more risk.
No, that's a great point. Great question, Isaac. I mean, back in November, I gave a talk on AI security and governance, at the Microsoft campus. And I got to tell you that with everything, governance is so critical. Right. I think it is the only glue that keeps the environment in a, if you will, in a sane order and keeps it, well structured and formatted. You know, with AI, you've got security risk coming, you've got compliance risk coming, you've got, but there is a number of risks coming, and having proper governance structures in place is important. Now, governance with a big G is often not taken well with organizations, right? Because a lot of people think of it as a set of documents being, that is overly imposing on how innovation occurs. So that governance also, people don't have to really bite the full thing, as you get started, you can always do a crawl, walk, run, fly journey on governance as well. Have the foundations in place. Work through your AI, work in establishing whatever your AI goals are and iterate and develop that model. We've seen that, implemented very, very successfully. And the rate of acceleration of creating governance in an organization also increases because there are advanced tools out there and there are things that you could not have done before in governance, you can do them today.
I agree with that notion, crawl to fly on governance. I also, we've talked about this a lot here about how governance is just a very difficult word. It's often just associated with policies, one and done policies. We know AI is something that's evolving. Niraj, at the at, my keynote that I've done for you in February that's being updated for September, I think you can't separate governance from strategy. When it comes to AI, I think they need to be intermingled, particularly to get people's interest and to connect value to what guardrails that you really need to have in place. And I'm going to add a third dimension to this as we're starting to do more with agentic AI and building AI agents across different platforms. I don't think you can separate operations from it. I think it needs a complete holistic definition. I don't think you should, have your policies up in front and how it's implemented and managed on the back end for nobody to see. I think it's just too much of a core of what organizations need to move to over the next few years, that you have to have strategy, governance, and operations all together. Joanne, I'd love to hear your opinion on this.
I think a holistic perspective is absolutely mandatory. That would be the table stakes for anybody going down the AI route, regardless of whether it's Gen AI, agentic AI, math AI, physics AI. It doesn't matter. You have to take the holistic approach. And I think the two words that are going to emerge very strongly over the next year, particularly with respect to governance, are provenance and lineage. Because we need to understand where did this data come from, its provenance, and where did it move to, and what impact did that have, its lineage, over and over again as we're going forward, because the table stakes will constantly be evolving because AI will continue to evolve. We have to wrap our minds around the fact that even though data is constantly changing, context is now changing even faster. And the context in which we use AI is changing faster. So, what was designed for a static system, meaning an IT system or as part of the governance or risk or any of those kind of words that were policy based, have to be as flexible, almost to the level of vibe coding, as the rest of the AI system. So it's going to be a challenge to do that. Provenance and lineage give us the direction to understand how to iterate and also give the systems, meaning the agentic tools that we're using, the opportunities to learn and evolve to keep up with what will be a continually changing environment around compliance, regulatory, and even security.
Thank you, Joanne. I agree with you. A big part of this is understanding the elements of data, particularly provenance, lineage, security, and much like people have access rights to information, we need to make sure that our agents have the right access rights. Much like we secure data for different contexts, I want to hear from Derek when he from Niraj, when he comes back, on the concept of virtual data rooms, and we put our agents in a room where they are sanctioned to the certain level of data that they should be getting access to. Derek, what are your thoughts around this? How do we bring these different factions together, our risk, legal, security, and IT teams, and really build a holistic AI strategy, governance, and operations around it?
Well, I think Joe mentioned it perfectly. They have to communicate. So one of the things is looking at, establishing either a business or cross-functional AI governance board to really look at what are those risks across all these particular areas and how do those translate. So when you're looking at the business risk, the operational risk, the cyber risk, the legal risk, all those things come together. You need to understand from, as Niraj mentioned, the lowest risk impact to the highest risk impact. How are those going to translate to business impacts overall? And how can we foster and understand it across all the organization? Because, like I said, it is an organizational challenge. It's not just one particular or a couple areas. And I think once we get everybody involved and understand that, it's going to be easier to work with the compliance, easier to work with the resilience, and easier to work with what are the going to be recommendations to mitigate it, even innovation strategies to make that work. Everybody has to have some sort of ownership within this particular AI governance to make sure they understand how it's going to affect the domino effect of change across those departments. And the other thing, the educational piece of it's going to be huge. This is not something that's one and done. We have to continually educate the people on the changes that are going to take place with an AI and all the different risk factors to look for. The tabletop exercises from an AI perspective are going to be key.
Yeah, I agree with that. I was chatting with a CTO yesterday on a panel. And she, one of the prominent nonprofit groups, they're using AI for grant writing, and for nonprofits, and they've got a ton of PII information in there and a ton of financial information in there. And the number one thing they had to do before doing anything around AI is just educating 300 people about what happens if they start cutting and pasting this information into open AIs out there.
Exactly.
So,
and that, having that conversation at the leadership level, I think, is also going to help escalate the way we can work with compliance, because The leadership needs to understand how the ripple effect is going to affect the overall organization. And I don't see enough tabletop exercises happening enough, especially at the AI level.
Thank you, Derek. We're going to go to Joe and John, and then we'll go back to Niraj. Hello, Joe.
Well, Derek brought up my favorite term, communication. I think, as he said, it is essential that you get everybody involved in the conversation across departments. You need a cross-functional team. And you really want to be, as the leader, as the trailblazer, you want to be the head of the department of know, KNOW, not the department of no, NO. Lead, guide, discuss. Don't try to stop it. You can't. Try to guide it and make sure that everybody is involved in the conversation from day one.
Joe, you're going to write that blog post for us, right? The Department of No versus the Department of No.
I think I did. It may be in my throat. I'll have to go back and look, but if I haven't, I'll certainly fill that one in.
No, it's a great concept because I remember doing my first AI governance keynotes a bunch of months ago. Maybe it was a year ago, and I was getting the NOs mostly from, either risk and data governance leaders. They just didn't know how to manage the underlying situations. And I think this is really about educating the employees. I think it's about setting up environments so that people can work. I think it's about setting a strategy so people understand what f areas of focus to really do their experimentation on. John, what am I leaving out?
Well, I was going to say, like the thing that really shocks me is how many companies would have all these really careful processes, and then when AI came out, they started using outside technology with so little testing, right? And it's just they completely bypassed the good practices that they had in kind of release management and change management and things like that. And so that the one biggest thing I would tell everyone is anytime people want to use new technologies is they can take a step back and try to understand like the fundamentals of things. I think they're going to be in a better spot to, as change management, like to release this technology and what are the risks associated with it. Taking a step back and having those conversations, I think is what's really key when you're releasing technology that could have all sorts of, you could be sharing information, it could be saying things you don't want it to the public.
Yeah, there's some great examples here. Fossil, thank you for sharing in the comment stream. He talks about his crawl and walk philosophy around their AI journey. He's got a bunch of examples here around what they've been implementing around contract management, customer contact center. Fossil, thank you for sharing with that. Niraj, I want to bring you back because we went from being able to tell employees that using the open public large language models, bad idea. Here's why, from a data perspective, from an IP perspective. And so then Microsoft came back and said, okay, you have your data here, you have your applications and your SaaS here. We're giving you Copilot or making it available. We're giving you the ability to do it with code. And but I get the sense that that's we have to take it a step further, right? Now we're getting these agents operating in a, let's just call that firewalled off environment. What else do we need to do to implement AI and governance strategy so that agents have access to the right data?
Yeah, thanks, Isaac. I usually don't talk products in these events, but in this particular instance, I've got to bring this up. If you don't know Microsoft Purview, you have to look at it. Back in 2003, Microsoft came out with SharePoint, and not many people looked at it. We jumped on it and built an entire company around it. And if you look around yourself, all the competitors of SharePoint are gone. Microsoft has done another home run with this product called Purview. It brings many things together. And the reason I'm saying this is because that is the foundation a lot, we are the, for a lot of AI-driven data security and protection. Okay, so I encourage you to look at it. If you need more information, I put my email on the chat. So back in 2020, one of the world's largest semiconductor company reached out to us to build a data program, protection program. They were paranoid about protection. At that time, I got to be honest, I had no idea about the AI wave back in 2020. But we set out with this company to build out their data classification, data protection scheme. It was an arduous, grueling exercise. We built the entire thing for the organization. Customers, half of them were happy, half were not happy because of the grueling exercise. But I get calls from the same company now thanking me for the comprehensive data protection we have built, which is coming out to be very, very valuable in the age of AI. Out of that, we actually spun up two products that we built. So NetWoven is also a product company. We have one product around data security. You all may have heard the term virtual data room. Virtual data rooms were primarily used by organizations to do mergers and acquisition and capital fundraising. When we set out to work with the semiconductor company, we asked a question that why is virtual data room only used for these two use cases? Why is it not used to manage, protect intellectual property for auditing, for customer collaboration, secure collaboration, for secure supplier collaboration? So we ended up building a new category called secure collaboration using virtual data room. So our product, check it out on www.govern365.com. I'll put that in. It allows you to create these data rooms where you can secure your content, and organizations who are using that product are freely using artificial intelligence. Because that data is secure, if anybody uploaded that data into any of the generative AI tools or want to utilize it for agents, they will not be until they have the permission. So I just wanted to close out to mention that data security protection is paramount for the rapid adoption of generative and agentic AI.
So I love hearing about these solutions. I remember when I first saw Purview, for example, I was like, actually advising a client at the time and just saying, there's some other things we probably need to get to before we get to something like Purview, knowing all the, work around data ownership, data classifications is just can be an arduous task. And I saw recent implementations of companies doing it. It is a heck of a lot easier. It's a heck of a lot more automated. It still needs a lot of guidelines. You're bringing together your IT, your data, your business folks to be able to do this. And we talk about bring in a frontier firm. I will share one of the recipes that I talk about in the AI governance keynote that I use. I'll be doing this in September in Atlanta with November in September in Atlanta. It's on September 10th, so do reach out if you're interested in participating in that. And I talk about being able to do the things that frontier firms do, which is not be on bleeding edge, be on the value edge, being able to test things, being able to be top-down strategic around areas that you really want to find AI capabilities to fit your goals, and other areas where you're going to empower your organization to do experimentation and find where AI is delivering value. And you're going to use a very agile approach. You're going to bring the folks who are really focused on the innovation in parallel, collaborating with your risk and your legal and your data security teams, and saying, you know what, we're not doing we're going to do some security up front, but we're going to do a lot of security in parallel to our innovation. And I think that's what frontier firms are all about. Niraj, I'm going to give you the final word on this.
No, thank you, Isaac, and thanks everyone to the attendees as well as the panelists. This is an exciting journey, and like with everything new, starts with fear, anxiety, and then towards excitement. I can tell you how excited I am and how others are. My kids tell me that, the dad has gone crazy because he's working like till 11, 1 or 2 in the night, and all they hear from me is about AI. But the reality is that this is an exciting journey to be it, and we all should embrace it. Whether you are a CIO, whether you are a business analyst, I encourage everybody to play with the technology. I mean, the amount of ideas, innovation, grounding your thoughts into reality, you will experience that, as you play with the technology. There's just a sea of game-changing activities happening. So I want to thank again. I look forward to seeing you all at the Atlanta event, whoever can make it. And if you need more information, I put my contact information, the company information in the chat. And looking forward to seeing you all soon in another event.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for a really lively conversation. Hello, Greg. Thank you for this comment on data management. AI governance are critical enablers for the public sector's AI success. Really interesting conversation, bringing together both frontier and the governance that's required. I want to thank NetWoven for being our sponsor today. Start your AI journey with NetWoven and become an AI-first business. Operate with AI agents as digital teammates, empowering human and AI collaboration at scale. Please visit netwoven.com to learn more. And again, I'll be speaking at the Microsoft Center in September, September 10th, with NetWoven as our sponsor. Do reach out to either Niraj or myself if you're interested in attending. Our upcoming coffee hours, you can visit starcio.com/coffee/next-event. If you ever get lost, it always redirects to the upcoming events. We're talking about AI era transformation next week on agentic versus AI agents, large versus small LLMs. That will be next week. On the first, we'll be talking about strategies for AI-ready data, turning data landfills to business gold mines. That actually came up last week, and I wanted to get that conversation going really quickly. And then on the eighth, slightly off of AI, we'll be talking about DevSecOps risk non-negotiables. We're talking about reliability, innovation, security, and culture in the new era of DevSecOps. And that will be on the 8th. Folks, thank you for joining a very lively event today. Hope you will join us in upcoming weeks. Everybody, have a great weekend. Thank you again, Niraj, for joining us. Thank you, Derek, Joanne, John, Joe, Liz, for being our expert panel today. And I'll see you all here next week for our next episode of the Coffee with Digital Trailblazers. Everybody, have a great weekend.
Thank you.